Here we go with Cape Fear, another great Simpsons episode. This is episode 9F22, first broadcast October 7th, 1993. My name is Matt Groening.
I'm John Vitti, the writer.
Hi, Al Jean. I was one of the showrunners, and I should mention Rich Moore, the director, isn't here at the moment, but he did a terrific job at this episode.
Yeah, it was just another illustration of how Rich can really do anything. This is a very extreme episode in many ways, and he did it just as well as he did his story episodes.
The idea for this episode that I recall was that Wally Wolodarski had just seen the remake of Cape Fear with Robert De Niro, and he said, oh, we should do that with Sideshow Bob. And, you know, everybody thought that was great, and we just sort of made a mental note to do it when we could. And then we assigned it to John, many people's favorite writer, including my mother's. And it was actually the last episode produced by the original team that did the show, and it was a holdover from the fourth year into the fifth season.
Yeah, that's why I've always regretted that it lost kind of what its place in history was to us. It was broadcast at the beginning of the fifth season, but it was the last week the original group was together. And originally, I was really unhappy when it got into the show number 22 slot, because the week that you write the show is always a very unhappy week, and I wanted my last week to be fun. But I think it really helped the episode. Everybody was just in a really loose mood. Once you know it, you can tell that it's written by a bunch of people who are thinking, what are you going to do, fire us? Because it's just a lot sillier than
this episode was silly to begin with, and it just got crazier. In fact, Act 3 was changed completely in animatic, I remember.
There were a lot of changes that were added, yeah. The opening, by the way, is a tip-off of Season 4, which is that it's a short episode with an extra-long main title where the Simpsons are singing and dancing to add time.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's nice. Let's say hello to my music guy, Scoey. That is some outfit, Scoey.
I think that was a parody of the beginning of the Arsenio show, where he looked so uncomfortable. Was it Branford Marsalis was his band leader? And he looked like there was absolutely zero chemistry, in my opinion, between them. I don't know either of them.
Horrible. The Fox Network has sunk to a new low. Lisa, you got a letter.
And, of course, the structure of this episode is based on the film Cape Fear. There are two versions, the classic with Robert Mitchum and then the Robert De Niro remake. And not only is the structure of the episode based on Cape Fear, but the soundtrack, the music that you hear when Sideshow Bob gets out of prison, which we still use when he gets out of prison, is the powerful, Elmer Bernstein, I think, wrote it.
Yeah.
Soundtrack from the original film.
And reused in the second film.
I'm going to kill you.
And reused in the second film. Yeah, no, it's just these strings are just so great.
He must have made so much money on this composition.
Or though maybe they're horns. It's just a little light.
Yeah, one of the many silly things about this is that a lot of people say it's just wrong to write beat-for-beat comedy, a parody in a comedy, and there's a number of things in this episode. If you haven't seen the movie Cape Fear, I have no idea how you make any sense of it. Something like Sideshow Bob working as Homer's maid. I just don't know what you think when you see that if you haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, the scene in the movie theater, which does make sense, but it's definitely, like, makes a lot more sense if you've seen the movie.
Oh, this is one of my favorite Itchy and Scratchies, if not my favorite.
The Goldfinger parody?
Yeah.
Also, what is the laser you're supposed to be heading up towards? There doesn't seem to be anything there. Well, one thing I remember, too, is you wrote the original outline. It was very funny, and you wrote a draft, and every version of it was short. Every version of it, we did not have enough to fill what was the minimum length for a show at that time. And we just kept adding different sequences, Itchy and Scratchy, people trying to kill Bart, you know, things where Bart was going to get killed, and it still wasn't long enough.
Well, it was the first time we wrote Sideshow Bob that it wasn't a mystery, and it gave us less content, but it was actually much more fun to write than Black Widower was, because by making it suspense instead of mystery, you didn't have to play Sideshow Bob pretending to be innocent for two acts. He just comes in, and he's trying to kill Bart, and you can really use Kelsey Grammer in a way that you couldn't before.
We should mention Kelsey, if we haven't on previous tracks, just somebody who is a delight to work with. Every time we ask him if he wants to do another Sideshow Bob, he's thrilled, and we're thrilled to have him. I mean, just one of these guys where every read is hilarious. When he comes to the table, it's just so exciting. You know, one of the best guest stars we've ever had.
Yeah, and his voice fits in with the regular cast. You know, it feels like, it definitely feels, doesn't feel like an outsider.
Yeah, another thing, as you're saying, it's not a mystery like previous Sideshow Bob episodes, so we didn't have to devote the attention to setting up clues and explaining them later and all that, stuff. Where it's hard, really hard to make it funny.
I'm gonna kill you. Oh, that's good.
Although, you know, we may have gotten a little lazy. Like, when you look at Sideshow Bob and, you know, his master plan, it really is just to stab this 10-year-old boy. I mean, when he gets to the boat, it's not very subtle. It's just, I'm going to cut him till he dies.
No, he has multiple opportunities to follow through on what he's been saying he's going to do from the start. It's rather Hamlet-like in that way. I don't know why he doesn't do it.
Some ice cream at the store, since I'm...
I remember when this stuff was being written, all these misleads.
This is the one where I go, now wait a minute, why is he scowling? His attitude changes for no logical reason.
Ma, these new finger razors make hedge trimming as much fun as sitting through church.
I don't know why it's supposed to be that scary seeing that topiary angel.
You're going to be my murder victim, Bart.
In our school production of Lizzie Borden.
No matter how many of these incidents we had, it still wasn't long enough.
Waxed with a wet noodle, Bart!
I'd like to help you, ma'am, but...
This was something I always remember from the original where they kept saying, oh, he hasn't broken any laws. And, you know, there's that twist where he has... was it Gregory Peck was the guy he was after?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it was. He has Gregory Peck arrested for harassing Robert Mitchum. And, you know, it's just such a great twist that you have the murderer filing a complaint against the innocent guy. What I liked about Robert Mitchum, too, is it was just he was so menacing without really even doing much. You know, I mean, he'd just sit there and you'd get scared, like, just so, you know, ominous and massive.
Linda Lavin? No, someone who didn't deserve it. Hello, Mo? We know you're the one behind this. So knock it off, or we're going
Oh, this is one of my favorite jokes, where you had them with the panda bears in the back room. I was always wondering exactly what Mo was doing. It's like, is he selling them to zoos, or...
That was, I think if I had to justify it, I would have said he was smuggling panda bears in from China and selling them to zoos at inflated prices.
This is a great directorial sequence by Rich. And the music works perfectly.
Dear life in the great United States, a funny thing happened to me.
Use a pen, Sideshow Bob.
I remember there was a debate, too, whether we would, I think, end just on the scary moment. You know, we always do go further with the joke, but it is a really terrifying thing. And it's actually genuinely frightening to see this cartoon where he's standing and sitting in his cell laughing.
No, there are parts of this one, especially in Act 3, where Sideshow Bob is really getting close to killing Bart, that it are way scarier than things we did when we knew we were doing an episode the week after. Circumstances.
I remember there's an irony here, too, which was you had the joke of yours in the previous Sideshow Bob episode where he says you can't keep the Democrats out of the White House forever. And then in the scene where he's going to get paroled, you have Clinton's picture, you know, who had just come into power.
Well, my assumption was that was always a send-up of the Republican canard about Democrats.
The joke?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was an exaggeration. And then I think that the Clinton picture was just, oh, we're excited we could actually put it. Well, in movies, you always see the president's picture in offices of the government or in courthouses.
She's always leaving the toilet seat up.
Robert, if released, would you pose any threat to one Bart Simpson?
Bart Simpson?
Now, this joke coming up, I'm pretty sure, was Conan's, where it's German for the Bart the.
A lot of the, yeah, Act 2, Conan was just terrific at writing Sideshow Bob, and especially later in giving Homer his new name, Conan and Mike were just going back and forth doing some of this stuff almost in continuous time.
Well, what about that tattoo on your chest? Doesn't it say die, Bart, die?
No, that's German for the Bart, the.
Everybody was amused but Jasper.
No one who speaks German could be an evil man.
Paul, granted.
That's a shot right out of Cape Fear. At the time, I remember we were obsessed with Ernest movies. We just thought they were hilarious for us to make fun of.
We'll stay here for a while, Bart.
And this, again, is a sequence from Cape Fear where he's harassing them at a movie theater.
That man is so rude.
We were very down on the Knoxville World's Fair, too. It got many, many shots on The Simpsons. I don't know what it did to get us mad.
That World's Fair pissed me off so much.
The move.
Hey, Mark, help me get my head out of this toilet.
That's always a thriller when you have him saying Sideshow Bob when he shows up. Especially when we have him at the table. Usually he does come. He's available for the reads.
Yeah, that was one of those last week things I remember, that the Thursday table read, the first one, didn't really go very well. And we got back to the rewrite room, and you and Mike looked at each other and said, it'll be fine when Kelsey reads it, which in a normal week would not happen. But we were just kind of all had one foot out the door at the time.
That's funny, because my recollection was it read well. I mean, it sounds like something we'd say, because definitely, you know, it's much better when he reads it. We actually have somebody when he's not available now. I think a man's name is Greg Berger, who will read it, never for the record, but who comes in and sounds a lot like him, you know, to see if the jokes work, you know, if Kelsey's doing his show.
Now, the only two things about Kelsey that are hard are that because he's so successful, he's not available for the first table reading. And then on record day, you have to get him out by lunch. And it actually kind of didn't wreck, but made our happy last day a little bit less happy, because the writers finished the record day rewrite very early, and we were all hanging out celebrating 4 great years, and we went down to the record room where you two were, and we walked in, and one of the actors turned to the other and said, "What are they doing here?" And the other actor said, "They want cake," because there was a good wrap-up cake on the table, and we immediately realized that not everybody was feeling the love that we were feeling, and turned around and headed back to the writer's room. And it actually, quite luckily, we had just a couple of weeks earlier lost the Emmy for Radio Bart for season 3, but in those days you got champagne from your agent just for being nominated. So the writers all just hung out on the new writers' building steps and broke open the champagne bottles and had a great last day while you guys were stuck in with the miserable actors.
It's kind of a sad story.
It's a true story.
Yeah, that sounds right. No, we were talking about in the break before we were doing this commentary that a history of The Simpsons should be written, an oral history, because nobody was everywhere at every time. Everybody had such completely different experiences.
No, there was actually a really beautiful last day for the guys who were wrapping up and leaving, and we were out there for a couple of hours. And even in an oddity, for reasons that were never really explained to me, Sam Simon came back and did part of like the rewrite, because I think Mike and Al were working on the Critic pilot at the time.
That was it. Jim had asked us to work on the Critic pilot, and so then he asked Sam to come in. He had a deal with Gracie Films to complete that deal working on The Simpsons while we were busy.
So there's even a cameo appearance by one of the original guys who was there at the time, and we all hung out, and then we went across the street to Harry's Bar that used to be there, and we were there till 8 o'clock, and it was really the most perfect last day I could have had, and I couldn't be happier that I didn't have directing responsibilities, because it was everywhere but in the recording room. You know, people really felt it. It had been a very long season, but I think as you came down to the last 4 or 5 episodes, you really started to appreciate that this was a special group of people and they were never going to be in the same room together. And so I think a lot of the black clouds started to lift the last month or so of the fourth season. And then it was actually a very happy last week.
I know my feeling was, and always is, I never really think anything's the end with the show. I mean, I remember directing going, well, this seems like it's the last episode we'll do, but then we did 2 more, and then we did 4 more, and then I came back and ran seasons 13 through 15 at least. No, it's like it's never the end.
Now, one of the worst predictions that have ever been made in Simpsons history was that the departure of the original staff was going to be the end of the show, and they weren't going to hire quality writers to replace them. Conan was freaked out at the time because he had started at the fourth season and they had signed him to a 2-year contract, not telling him that everybody else's contract ran out at the end of the fourth season. So, you know, we were spending a lot of time at Harry's Bar laughing about how Conan was going to be writing the show all by himself.
I remember you going, "What are you going to do, get a talk show? Get out of your deal. Go ahead, get a talk show, Conan." 2 things I could just call attention to. Again, Sideshow Bob under the car is from the Robert De Niro version of Cape Fear, a very scary image. And then the Homer's hat and the singing, if people don't recognize it, it's a visual reference to I Love Lucy when they went to Hollywood. Although the idea of doing all the Gilbert and Sullivan songs was, I know, something Sam put in Kelsey has such a beautiful voice that, you know, we just all thought it would be great if he could, you know, sing in this episode. And the part where he sings from HMS Pinafore is just really beautiful in and of its own.
But in the original, was it in the original script?
No.
No. It came in an animatic, right?
The singing, not an animatic. What happened was it came in prior to the between the original script and the table read. At the animatic, we were looking at it, and what often happens when you have a lot of singing is the visuals are a little
behind. Wait. Stop. We got to talk about
that. This
is what came in at the animatic.
No,
I remember.
Actually, I can explain this because people have asked me, and Mark McJimsey, the editor, and I are the two who know. What happened here was we did put in jokes with him hitting the rake, and we, you know, added a few. We thought it was funny that he would step on them. The reason there are so many was, again, because the show was short. And I was editing it with Mark, and I said, how can it still be 20 friggin' seconds short? So I said, you know, add a couple more rakes hitting him. And then, you know, that was, you know, a little longer, but it wasn't long enough. And then, again, Sam had said, you know, when something's funny and then you do it so much it's not funny, if you keep doing it, it might get really funny. So we just said, let's just go for broke and put in as many as we possibly can.
I remember at the time, it had gotten to a point where it wasn't funny. And then,
but then I
were added,
and then
he
added
was right,
more.
Sam was right, it did get funny.
Yep, and I remember Kelsey Grammer said to me, he goes, you know, I was watching it at home, because he had only done one. He was like, what the hell is he doing? And then he thought it was funny, but he was very surprised by how many there were.
Hello, Bart.
That's the real reason behind its being so long, is that the show was too short.
It was controversial, and it still is, among the fans.
Yes, some people have said it's the funniest thing they've ever seen, but it's usually followed by, and I was so high when I saw it. This always makes me laugh. The funniest thing is the elephant with just one word on his bag. Or rather, I mean the one that, the word the. It's just the word the on the elephant.
Oh, man, that's a...
The other thing this established, which is just so hilarious to me, is that it is like a Roadrunner cartoon, you know, with Sideshow Bob as the coyote, where, you know, he's just continually thwarted by this 10-year-old boy who isn't even very smart.
Well, that I remember was something that Sam had come back from Cape Fear making fun of, and so I think we were actually considering ourselves legitimate satirists by doing that.
Surprise boy in bed. And disembowel him. No, I don't like that bowel in there. Gut him. Ah, le mot juste.
This is my favorite scene in the movie. In the show. Wait, the next joke is...
No, this was another one where we added it. We originally, you put the brownie joke in, and we got such a big laugh that, again, for length, we added in the ski mask and the hockey mask and chainsaw.
And I think one of those jokes, that Conan's ability as a performer really sold this joke, because this was Conan's pitch, and he could actually perform it very well and made us all laugh. And then, you know, if you think of this joke not being animated really well, it would not work. And, you know, and it's one of those things where, as simple as it is, if you don't have Rich Moore doing it, it isn't nearly as good.
That makes me laugh. There's a rake on the boat. But here it is. Here's his big master plan. I'm just going to cut his throat with this knife.
Hello, Bart.
Mom, Dad!
Your family can't help you now.
Tied up the cat. That's good.
Oh no, Dad's been drugged.
No, he hasn't.
What I do remember, I think I was about to say, with the singing was, a lot of the jokes, like the British flag, etc., the surrealistic things came in at the animatic screening. We added them because we thought, oh, you know, when you have a song, you often have the song that sounds funny at a table read, but it's not as funny visually when you see it, and you got to put stuff in.
I remember at the animatic, it just got very, in from my point of view, very, very silly, very, very goofy and all this stuff, and I actually thought you guys were getting so giddy that you weren't serious, that you really weren't going to have Bart have a program and... And does he have popcorn or something? He's just watching
popcorn and the British flag unfurls behind him.
I thought you guys were kidding around because we often pitch jokes that don't end up actually being used in the thing. And I remember I had to leave a little early, and I said, "Okay, see, thinking,
so they wanted
okay,
to air with those
this,
things."
No, and I went, "What the?"
I have a vague recollection. The only thing I would say is we didn't do it out of spite. No, we thought that you were okay with them.
No. Yeah. I love it now. I just remember all the writers, Sam and you all thought it was hilarious, and David Silverman was practically like rolling on the floor. He's a huge Gilbert and Sullivan fan, and it's one of the high points of the show.
There could have been a costume shop on the way. He could have printed up a playbill at a Kinko's in the forest.
That he is an Englishman, he remains an Englishman.
The flag is a little much. I don't know who's unfurling it. Cutting his throat. It always just gets back to that.
And now, the final curtain.
Hold it right there, Sideshow Bob.
Now, there's a really minor footnote. This was actually rewritten later with the season 5 staff. I remember when Mike and I were working on it at the very end, I was editing it, and it was like a little orphan show because the staff that had written it was gone and the new one wasn't, really working on our stuff. So we borrowed them from David Merkin for a morning to get the line, like, thank God, it was near this brothel. And I think that was Jace Richdale that pitched that. So it's one of the few shows where there's a combination of writers. And here's something we put in that I do think is too silly. I remember watching this again years later going, oh, maybe this is over the top.
Look what happened without my pills!
Now, I have also seen this episode mentioned on Jump the Shark as the moment when the Simpsons jumped the shark. So it's not that everyone loves how silly it is.
But I should say it's one of the most popular. Most people say it's one of their top 10 favorites.
I'm all yours!
If I could only see Bob get hit by the rake one more time.
Good job, Rich Moore.
He's great. And then actually he left with us to do The Critic. He was a supervising director there.
Available on DVD.
And Futurama, wasn't he your supervising
director? Yeah, he's fantastic on Futurama.